Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. I am the host who loves toast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and as almost always, I am joined by my colleague, my cohort, my partner in crime, the host who doesn't love toast, the Mr. Black and Gold until he's dead and cold, a one Mr. Brian E. Roach. How are you doing, Mr. Brian?
I'm just dandy, except that somebody tried to make me eat toast, and I didn't like it, so I didn't eat it.
You didn't catch all my... I was thinking as I kept saying Mr. and Mr. and Mr. Mr. at the beginning of this introduction here, that maybe we should like lead in with Mr. Mr., like from the 80s, you know? Isn't that Broken Wings, I think, is the song?
Yeah. Yeah, take these broken wings and learn to fly again, you 80s music guy, you.
Hey, I'm a throwback, man. I like, I kind of like just about everything when it comes to music. You know what else I like? Just about everything with breakfast food. You know, the other episode, maybe one or two back, I cut myself off from jumping into the topic. I think most people may not be aware of, you know, we got a lot of new listeners out there, a lot of subscribers on all the various services like iTunes and YouTube and that. And thank you for joining us, by the way, and supporting the show. And I'd say, you know, 9.5 out of 10 comments are all great. Even if they're critical, they're great. I love the comments. There's a few out there that, you know, people swear and it's like, oh, come on, man. We try and keep this clean. So, but I meant to ask you some of this stuff, and I just give some background. For some reason, I think Brian started saying that he's the host who doesn't like toast, and, you know, just because it rhymed, and we got into talking, and he really doesn't like toast, and I love toast. I mean, the more butter, the better, is what I used to say. I do some jams and jellies from time to time. I usually do it in a restaurant, though. When I'm at home, man, ain't nothing like, you know, I got the 4-slice toaster going, and it's funny because one of our colleagues, Terry, who, runs the WTF edition of the show in season, she actually pranked both of us and sent us toasters, and Brian got the 2-slicer since he doesn't like toast, and I got, you know, a 4-slicer that, you know, has actually unfortunately died since then. But, it's nothing for me to make like 8 slices of toast. I don't do it during the week as much, but on the weekend, man, it's like a guilty pleasure. So I wanted to ask Brian, because I also know, like, you're not into coffee either. You called it like a black or brown sludge or whatever it was. What is there any breakfast food that you partake in? I mean, are you into eggs? Are you into, you know, pancakes or waffles or French toast or anything like that?
I like me some nice scrambled eggs. I'm good with some scrambled eggs. I like some scrambled eggs with a little bit of green pepper and cheese and some onion in there. I'm good with that.
That sounds pretty good. What about bacon, man?
Look, if you don't like bacon, I can't talk to you.
Oh, thank you. Bacon's good. That's like the Pulp Fiction quote right there, you know.
I will say this, though. I have a friend, a high school buddy down in Florida, who is more obsessed with bacon than anyone I know. And I went down for his 50th birthday party, and he had a bacon shake. And that's above and beyond the pale for me. I like my bacon with my breakfast. Please do not dip it in any nasty chocolate, because I don't like chocolate. And also, please do not be making me no bacon shakes. On a burger, I'm okay with it. But not in none of these weird bacon things that shouldn't be bacon.
I went to a county fair maybe a year or two ago that had deep fried bacon, you know, the deep fried Oreos and deep, they went that mm-hmm. far. They went to deep fried bacon. I'm like, no, you know what? I value my health. So, you know, I thought you were about to say that your buddy doesn't dig on swine, following into my, you know, Pulp Fiction reference there. But alas, this is good though, man. Bacon, you know, I even do the turkey bacon. It's a little healthier. You know, I'm not picky. I like the applewood bacon. You know what else I like? I found one of the local places I shop. They have like this chicken apple sausage that's just amazing to make for breakfast. But anyway, we should be talking some football. Maybe somebody's catching this in the morning, you know, over your holiday weekend. So a happy Memorial Day weekend to everyone out there. And I also wanted to just plug something over on the website. You know, it kind of fits into what we're going to talk about with you know, the offensive line today. And then also, you know, in for Memorial Day in memoriam, it's an article about Mike Webster. You might want to check that over at steelcityunderground.com, written by one of our great colleagues and an editor over at the site, Tina Rivers, occasional guest on the show as well. And, you know, one heck of a nice lady who's very knowledgeable on all sports. And she's a tough SOB too. And just, I don't know what I would do without her, Brian. I mean, she's just like, she'd be mad because I know she listens to these, but I almost want to call her a team mom, and that's going to really anger her. But I'm going to say it anyways. She's like a team mom. I don't know what we would do without her.
I will second almost everything you said except for the mom part, but that's because I'm too old for her to be my mom.
Yeah, but you know what? She kind of shepherds like all of the youngins that we have running around here. You know, the guys who say lit and hive and all those things that we reference. So, yes. You know, speaking of a lit and hive and things like that, I just wanted to bring up real quick too, because what made me think of this is we're going to be speaking about Ramon Foster here, Steelers starting blah, 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 left guard. Wow, I'm all over the place today. You know, he and some others have gone on social media recently and have called out some, whether it be like fans or people in the media or even some other people who run like, you know, websites, whether they're competitors to us or whatever. I'm not going to mention names, but I will mention players, and people have seen some of this, and for good, bad, or worse, some of them, like, you know, Bud Dupree made a comment to one guy in particular and, you know, called him a little bit of derogatory names. But I've seen, you know, some stuff, you know, Terrell Edmonds, obviously some people wanted to make a big deal of him liking something and probably not even knowing what Antonio Brown was posting, because you know what, most of the time we don't know, and I don't know that he knows what he's doing. So I mean, these guys are still friends even though they're not on the same team. There's people across all throughout the NFL and guys that are no longer in the NFL that obviously are friends and still talk to each other. You see Ben, what, they go on like the turkey shoot or whatever it is every year, mm-hmm. and, you know, or they go hunting, they have a hunting trip, and you still see some guys that are no longer in the league. Obviously Brett Kiesel's part of that. James Harrison, who left the team, you know, under whatever circumstances that, you know, was a big blow up, he was still a part of that. So I mean, you know, people are talking about all that, and we see some bonding too, because we saw the stuff about Ben taking some of the members of the offense out to his lake house or whatever prior to OTAs. And we're hearing some other stuff about how the secondary is really hanging together. Edmonds has said some stuff about that. And then we see some guys, you know, actually rejecting some of the things that are out there, you know, that are put out there on social media and or with just the regular media. And, you know, it was what, Devin Bush said something about a false report. And, you know, he's only a rookie. He's just learning now that, you know, some of these guys, they just want to throw things out there to get, you know, your clickbait. You need to get people to come to your website and make some ad revenue, and then anything that's sensational TMZ style, they'll throw it out there. And I wrote about that ad nauseum about a month ago about, you know, I don't like to do those type of things, because without these football players, what do we have to talk about? How do we have, you know, the podium that we have to speak about this? So, but more or less why I'm saying some of this, Ramon Foster called out somebody and said, hey, you know, back off of this or whatever. Cam Hayward has said some stuff and said, you know, this feels like a tighter group. You got all of these guys. I think Joe Hayden, Anthony Ciccolo has been out there, you know, very visible saying some stuff too. And all of it together just seems to me like some people want to make it a drama thing that doesn't exist now. And it doesn't exist because the two knuckleheads that are no longer on the team, well, we see the drama they're creating for their new teams, or not, because they're not showing up for them. So, you know, I don't want to belabor, you know, the guys that are gone. You know, they're no longer a part of a team. We really don't need to talk about them. But they appear to be the source of so-called drama that's been existing off-field. And now you have players coming out and saying, hey, look, this isn't a thing. There's no beef here. There's no problems here. We're one big family. We get along. We like each other. We're bonding, and we're trying to be the best team we can be in 2019. And, you know, that's pretty much where I want to take it with that. And I'm not going to really discuss much more of it, but I don't know. It has a different feel or different approach than past seasons, because I think some teams or some of these players would just let this kind of roll. just kind of let it go and let some of these other things spiral out of control. And now you have a few players who are stepping up, even Juju, for that matter. They were trying to say Juju took a shot at, you know, AB or whatever. And it was like, we're really creating something out of nothing that doesn't exist there. And now, not only to that degree where we may have already known that, now you have some of the players or some leaders on this team definitely coming out and telling you that's not the case.
Yeah, it's got a different vibe. There's no doubt about it. This offseason, this set of OTAs has a different feel to it. And it's very clear that the message that the team wants to put out is back off the drama talk, because there isn't any here. You know, Mark Caboli got abused a little bit on the Twitter.
Yeah, so
I'm not
going to
go into everything that was said, but you know, that it was, you know, he made a comment that was certainly speculative and driven at trying to, you know, elicit some drama, and basically got told, back off, buddy. That's not the case, and don't start pulling this nonsense. Look, the media is going to pull at threads. The media is going to try, as you said, to get things that entice you, especially, you know, somebody like Caboli, who's working for The Athletic, which I'm sure is a fine organization, but is a pay site, and they want people to pay to subscribe to it. So he's going to try and drive business towards his site. And as a result, some of the things he's going to say are going to be designed to pique the interest of the populace and make them want to, you know, fess up their $99 or whatever it costs, I don't know, to go over there and be able to read the articles. But nonetheless, that doesn't mean that these clickbait topics and that these suspected drama things don't necessarily have to exist. And I'm really, you know, the one you talked about, Terrell Edmunds, and you know, I think here's the thing: if this bothered me more than anything else, I don't care that he liked Antonio Brown's two-faced comment, which came out well before Ben Roethlisberger's interview was aired on KDKA. And I think, you know, whether you decide that's who it's targeted for or not, there was no way for Edmunds to know that when he liked it. And then here's what happens. Later on, they report that he liked it after it was clear. That's nonsense. It's bad reporting. It's not the case. He saw a comment. Maybe he thought he was talking about the Batman villain. Who knows? it could be anything. And you know, Edmunds addressed it, and he basically said, no, it's not meant to be any disrespect to anybody. Yeah, I'm still friends with AB. But I was just seeing a tweet, and I was going to hit like because he tweeted. I've done it. I see a tweet. I go like, and I sometimes don't think about it. It's possible. I don't think that we have this divisiveness in the locker room that we have had in years past, or has seemed like it came up in years past. And the team itself is making a concerted effort to make the message, it's not here, not now, not this year.
Yeah, just to give you kind of an idea, I believe that the Ben Roethlisberger interview actually aired on the evening sports edition for KDKA with Bob Pompiani doing the interview. And it was like a 3-minute interview that people tried to cherry pick some things out of it too. And did Ben really say much of anything? He said pretty much, okay, yeah, we have to replace AB's production. Juju is kind of a leader or whatever. You know, that was kind of the at least the B roll was, you know, kind of putting that in there. And he mentioned something else, and now I'm drawing a blank. And he talked about his radio show and how people enjoy it, and he was debating on whether to continue that or not, because, you know, I enjoy listening to Ben. I enjoy getting some insight in that. And I guess he's going to probably talk it over, not only with, you know, obviously his family, but his teammates, more or less his football family, and see what's clear there. But this actually dropped on the on their website, pittsburgh.cbslocal.com, at 11:19 at night. Okay, 11:19, after 11 o'clock at night on May 20th, AB tweeted the two-faced thing at 3:14. You know, it's like 8 hours earlier in the day. I don't know what he's talking about. You know, maybe there was some snippet or something I missed to come out, and, you know, then he's, who knows what he's talking about. He could be talking about the Batman villain. They had those in the theater. They were releasing those. What is that? They have those special airings of like one time here or there during the middle of the week. Fathom events. That's what they call them. They were just doing all the Batman movies. Maybe he was, you know, he was talking about that Batman Forever debacle of a movie that came out, you know, 20 some years ago. So I didn't even like it when I was a kid. I was like, what are they doing with this movie? I was all into the Tim Burton Batman movies. I thought those were excellent. And then, you know, Jim Carrey should have been an excellent Riddler. And then Tommy Lee Jones's Two-Face probably wasn't very good. And Antonio Brown took exception to it. So anyhow, I was trying to protect the guilty there with Cabali. Unfortunately, one of the comments he did make, I took exception to was, you know, Landry Jones got released by the Raiders, and you know, you tweeted at me with that, and I had a tear in my eye, and you know, we may have mentioned it on one of the previous episodes. And for any new listeners, I was a big Landry Jones truther, a big defender, and a lot of it is, you know, either hyperbole or sarcasm, but I really pulled for the guy. I liked him, and he was a likable guy. Not only was he a likable guy, when Cabali made this tweet or this comment, he said something about, you know, well, apparently Antonio Brown doesn't want to catch balls from Landry Jones still doesn't want to catch balls from Landry Jones, and Vince Williams came out of, like, you know, left field, and he trashed that, and he said Landry was one of the most likable people in the locker room and this and that. And we always thought of him as, like, you know, a very quiet, keep to himself type guy. He's not on social media or anything like that. He just tended to be, you know, not like this big, you know, vocal. He's not Baker Mayfield. You know what I mean? He's not out there and in your face. So to see that, it was like, that was kind of a refreshing take. And I know Cabali was just trying to make like a joke. And we made a similar joke, you know, on April Fool's Day, and said the reason Antonio Brown got traded to the Raiders was because of Landry Jones, or the other way around. We said that, you know, that was the connection and got Landry Jones a job. I don't remember which way it was or in what sequence, but, you know, we tried to have some fun with that ourselves, so we're no less guilty of, you know, trying to make, like, you know, a yuck yuck joke for a little bit of attention here or there. You know, I think ours was in good fun with some fake player quotes, and I don't know, the one with you know, Mr. Cabali, just unfortunately, you know, just rubbed me the wrong way, just because I like Landry a lot, and I was very sad to see him. You know, I mean, seriously, you know, I don't know what Chucky's doing over there in Oakland. You know, Mike Glennon, Nate Peterman, and you cut Landry Jones, and it's like, I'm pretty sure Landry's probably better than that. But it took Landry a while to assimilate himself into Todd Haley's playbook, and I don't know that he's necessarily picking up stuff real quick, or maybe he just doesn't click because the Raiders don't have that much talent this season, or what may be the case. But anyways, Godspeed. I hope he lands on his feet somewhere and gets an opportunity. You never know. Maybe, you know, maybe he's one of these guys that just walks away. I don't know. He's been taking a couple jobs and tryouts, you know, since he left the Steelers. So maybe I would even like to see him maybe get a second chance in one of these leagues, like an XFL or something, you know, maybe next spring. So we'll see what goes on with that. But kind of closing the door on that whole thing, because we do want to talk offensive line. And, you know, this isn't a position to really gloss over. Just starting from the very top, Mike Munchak, the, you know, offensive line coach from – why can't I never remember this, Brian? 2014 or 2015? When did he arrive in town?
I think 14.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look this up now. But, you know, he's gone. He went to Denver. We talked about this in, you know, very – in the archives about, you know, it was more of a family decision. It was – his contract was up. He was free to go. We've seen this happen with assistants and coaches all over, and it has to deal with, you know, going back home or being around family, or, you know, maybe even like they just don't like the climate where they're at. You know, you're in, I don't know, Houston, Texas, and you just think it's too hot, or Arizona or something like that. So, you know, a lot of people make human decisions here, and I don't think it had anything to do with, you know, the Steelers being a dumpster fire or a sinking ship or whatever people wanted to make it out to be. He just wanted to, you know, go and be closer. What, he had a daughter and grandkids and stuff out there, I believe. And so, you know, he's in Denver now. And he'd been around with the Steelers. He'd been around like forever, you know, Hall of Fame player on the offensive line. And he's been, you know, everything from, you know, he was with the Houston Oilers / Tennessee Titans from 1982 all the way until 2013, when then he was fired as their head coach and came to the Steelers for a handful of seasons here. And you saw some improvement with the offensive line. I was trying to make some type of, you know, kind of correlation between his arrival and certain players, but I think some of the talent for the players was already there, and for some others it wasn't. So we're going to go through some of the players, but no doubt there'll be an impact here as far as losing Mike Munchak. I think he was one of the maybe the most valuable assistant, quite possibly. You now have Sean Surrett, who has actually been around and with the team longer than Mike Munchak had been. And just making some correlations too, Brian, I was looking back at, for whatever reason, I randomly picked a game, the start of the 2010 season. It was the overtime win where, you know, Ben was on the, you know, suspended and Dennis Dixon started. They played the Falcons, won in OT. And, you know, they had made some changes with a lot of coaching and stuff that season too, and then ended up winding up in the Super Bowl. And they had made an offensive line switch back then too. So, I mean, the Steelers are accustomed to this kind of change. Mike Tomlin was the coach there. They're accustomed to this, these type of changes. And I think Sean Surrett, who's been around for a little while, not only are the players familiar with them, the organization's familiar with them, the coaching staff is comfortable with him taking this role, and he's probably learned just as much, maybe even more, from a coaching standpoint to add to his toolkit from Mike Munchak, too. I expect a continuation of good things here. As far as the pipeline going down the road, you know, some of the guys that are going to start coming in who didn't play for Coach Munchak, that could be a different story. But right now, I think the Steelers, from this standpoint, I think they're set. I think they're going to be comfortable. I think they're going to be just all right. And we should see, you know, more. How would I want to say this? Like a continuation, or just, you know, the standard that we've become used to from the offensive line in 2019?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Look, one of my favorite things that got tweeted out or expressed was that Sean Surrett was coaching the offensive line, like it was a surprise. They early in either the OTAs or the mini camp, somebody tweeted out, "Here's look, Sean Surrett's really involved. He's just jumping right in there." Well, what do you expect him to do? He's coaching the line. He's going to do it. It was like the dumbest thing ever. And, you know, he's been with the team a while. He's been under Munchak for the entire tenure that Munchak was there. I think if there's anybody who can carry on, it's him. The offensive line loves him. You know, they have nothing but praise for the guy. He's got energy. He's a younger guy. And we'll have to see how it goes. But, you know, there's no question that he has big shoes to fill. You know, the professor, Zach Meckler, and I, we were in mourning when Munchak left.
Oh, who was it?
Because those are our guys. The offensive line is our guys, being ex-offensive linemen. And we looked at that and thought, geez, man. But, you know, we're both encouraged. And we, you know, Zach has talked to me about this. In the back rooms about how we expect things to go. First of all, you're not dealing with, you know, a bunch of hodgepodged together offensive linemen or a bunch of new guys or a bunch of rookies. You've got a veteran core offensive line group that's played together for a lot of years and is ranked very highly within the league and thought of very highly within the league. And that continuity is just as important to that offensive line as coaching is going to be, because these guys know each other. That's going to help Surrett when he has to deal with them. It's going to help when he's trying to coach up the younger guys. All of that is going to blend together to really have made this the best possible situation for him as an incoming new offensive line coach.
Yeah, and you know what? The Steelers have ranked. I think the biggest thing here is that they've been able to not only run the football successfully in recent years, but Big Ben has also been pretty much untouched after being a pinata in the Bruce Arians offense. And I know he became somewhat of a scapegoat there too. But you know, we also see what happened with some of these other quarterbacks that he's been, you know, in charge of. And we'll see what happens with Jameis Winston this year if he gets to be a punching bag now, like Carson Palmer had been for a few seasons. So anyway, you know, the Steelers haven't given up too many sacks in recent years. years, 2018, 24, 2017, 24. Three of those, Landry Jones, when they had a chance to set, what was it, the franchise record, and I think they tied it or came close. Three of those in week 17 because Ben sat, and, you know, a few of, yeah, I think, DeCastro and Pouncey and them sat too. So, and then you go to, let me see, 2016, I have, it's less than two per game still on average. So it was 21 in that season. And then you had to go all the way back to 2015 for when they gave up more than 30 sacks on a season. And I had the number here. And this is overwhelmingly because of Michael Vick getting tackled behind the line on scramble plays. But it was 33 sacks total. In fact, one of those actually counts as a sack with Antonio Brown attempting to pass the football, I believe. And Michael Vick got sacked 10 times. Landry Jones came in and got sacked twice. Ben only 20 sacks in, you know, 11 starts as it's named here. This is a very deceiving number because there's the game where he came in for Landry Jones after only like three plays. Landry tweaked something like an ankle or something, and Ben came in as a backup and broke some backup record against the Browns at home. So I remember that one very clearly because it was like, oh, the best backup of all time. And I'm like, they're talking about Landry. No, they're talking about Ben coming in for Landry. So, but yeah, I mean, this is, you know, Sean Surrett was here for all of that and then some. He's been around. This will be his seventh season with the Steelers, and obviously his first as a primarily an assistant. He's done all kind of stuff as far as, I should say, a position coach, because he's been an offensive assistant with the offensive line primarily. He's also been part of the coaching staff with game preparation and video and film and scouting and stuff of that nature. So, you know, it's not like he's the new kid on the block. He's definitely been around. It's somebody they feel comfortable with. I dare say as comfortable as they felt with putting Randy Fichtner up in Todd Haley's position last year. So this is going to be some interesting stuff. We will miss Mike Munchak because he has taken some players. The Steelers haven't had to really spend any high draft picks on any offensive linemen for a long time, but when they did, you know, their first round draft pick back in 2010, Marquise Pouncey. And Marquise Pouncey has also always been considered one of the elite centers in the NFL. He's been an all-pro. He's been a Pro Bowl player for many, many years. And I'm trying to actually pull up all of, you know, when you got to look up offensive linemen, there's no stats for offensive linemen. You don't get to see anything like, you know, a pancake block or anything like that. It's almost like, you know, I would love for them to come up or make up something for offensive linemen. That would be pretty cool. It's kind of like, you know, when you always see that, what, sacks only count since as a statistic since 1982, and you always wonder where all of the, you know, steel curtain guys fall into that. Would somebody go back, watch some film, Stats Inc., and just please put it down as an official statistic so we can make some comparisons, please. So, you know, Pouncey's been a Pro Bowler pretty much his whole career except for the year in 2013 where he got hurt, and he's been an All Pro twice. Pro Football Focus in their wizardry magic, Zach will definitely, or the professor will love this, because Pouncey graded out as a 69.0, and for some reason number 14 center in the league. And a lot of people are wondering, you know, they very rarely give like very crazy grades for anybody. Anything that hovers around a 70, again, this isn't like a C or a C+. This is considered above average. They have good, they have high quality and elite. Very few players grade as elite. Very few grade as high quality. So if you're in the above average or good, it's pretty good. And I mean, we all know that, you know, Pouncey at times, better or worse or whatever. Everybody has a good game. Some people have a bad game. We don't know how they come up with these grades. The best we can say here is that, you know, you have a guy that's anchoring the center of the field that, you know, he's – you know, not according to them, is he elite? I think in the NFL, he's elite. I know he's paid like he's elite. We've seen him get out in front of even like Le'Veon Bell down the field and block. He's got a motor, and he's a guy that Big Ben trusts an awful lot. Ben said, you know, they've both been linked to saying, I'll play as long as the other guy plays. And he's also, by all aspects, we're talking about the drama stuff, he is a locker room leader. You don't hear much about it. But here's somebody that's in the weight room pounding it out, and he is a leader to all the other young men that are on that roster.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's part of the thing about the offensive line in general is you end up having a lot of team leaders on the line. You've got Ramon Foster, who's not just, you know, is their union rep as well, and is a vocal guy in the locker room. DeCastro is more of a lead by example kind of guy. You've got Villanueva, who is, again, a lead by example guy, but who has everybody's respect. You know, and then Pouncey. Pouncey is, you know, it's kind of the way Joe Green was, and that's a strong comparison to make, but it's true, is in that, you know, if you're in that locker room and Pouncey says this is going to change, then that's going to change. And that's the way, that's the kind of leadership that Joe Green had when back in the day in his, you know, in his era, where if Joe said something, then that's the way it was. And everybody just kind of went, okay, Joe says that, then that's how it's going to be. And I think Pouncey has a good portion of that same kind here. You know, he's a guy that all the other players respect and listen to. And, you know, it's nice to see them stepping forward the way they are, especially early in the season, because I think there were lessons learned from last year.
Oh, absolutely. And I love you already going to Ramon Foster here, who we could segue this into saying, no one ever talks about what Ramon talks about. Is his radio show like too early, like at 8 a.m. or whatever? You know, he's on the same exact station as Big Ben, and you only usually ever hear, even when he makes, like, he shots fired from Ramon on some of this stuff. You know, he has some hot takes here or there, and it's like, you know, if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there to hear it, does it make a sound? That's unfortunately sometimes, but Ramon has one of the most interesting radio shows too. And I believe he's done a podcast here or there, maybe even with Rosie Nix or something. I know some of these guys like play around, you know, especially when they have their free time. And, you know, Ramon's starting to get up there. He's, you know, he was 30, now he's 33. He was 32 last season. You know, his birthday's in January. But, you know, a lot of linemen can play, you know, well into their mid-30s. And, you know, Foster's a guy who was undrafted, and he's pretty much been Mr. Availability. He had a couple dings and dents, you know, the previous two seasons, but he was there for all 16 games last year. And this is the guy that's relied upon when they're playing on the road and it's a loud place, like down in New Orleans, the Superdome. You know, he does the silent snap thing where he taps, you know, Pouncey on the thigh or whatever, and then they snap. And, you know, he's trusted in that position. You mentioned he's a union rep. There's a lot of good to come from him. It's actually quite amazing to me to see how many players are on the Steelers offensive line that are undrafted here. And the reason it should further surprise you is that, you know, the Wizards over at Pro Football Focus had the Steelers as their offensive line of the year last season. They said they were the most dominant, you know, one of the most dominant units over the last couple of years, but they named them the de facto dominant unit going into 2018. I remember, didn't we like, you know, snicker and snork at them? They had like the Browns or somebody listed as number two in the preseason thing, and I think the Steelers were like sixth or seventh, or if they were top 10 even. And I'm like, what are you smoking? You know what I mean? And, you know, you look at this lineup and there's, I think they just look at it because of draft pedigree. You got two first rounders, and then the primary starters last year were all undrafted guys. When you put that all together, their cumulative pass blocking efficiency was 85.5, and it's the highest rating the PFF has graded since the 2015 Dallas Cowboys. Eighth fewest total pressures, even though they had the third most passing plays, and, you know, fourth fewest sacks, obviously. We talked about some of that. And, their offensive line is also good when it comes to not only keeping Ben upright and only allowing pressures on 24.3% of pass plays, but they're also decent in the run game, although the Steelers had like the second lowest, you know, we were talking about this with the running backs things, the second lowest amount of run plays of all 32 NFL teams last year. So, I mean, they still get it done when they're relied upon doing that. They still get it done even when one of their starters, a former second round pick and has now been traded, Marcus Gilbert, goes down, and you have to rely on Matt Filer. And everybody's like, who is Matt Filer? Matt Filer grades out as a 71.0, a flat right there, but the number 32 tackle in the NFL. hey, you know what? I'm going to take it because there's two tackles. You got a right and a left tackle, and then you also have players that are coming in. You know, he plays, I'm trying to think, maybe 10 games last year. I'm gonna pull him up in a second here and see how many starts he ended up having in absence of Marcus Gilbert. And, this is just the standard is the standard, as we like to say. And, yep. Okay, so he started 10 games. He appeared in 11. Wow, that's good for memory. And then he also, he played in one. I think that was the Week 17 game back in 2017. He made a few appearances, jumbo packages and whatnot as well. I want to say, was Filer originally penciled in to be a guard, and then they kicked him out the tackle, kind of like Chris Hubbard? I don't recall. But regardless, undrafted young man here who from Bloomsburg College, some of yins that are out there may actually know where Bloomsburg is. Whoever thought that, he's going to be a starting tackle in the NFL, and he comes out of this tiny, tiny little university in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, population of 14,000. We probably have a listener or two that are listening right now that are from there or from that area. And here you go. You find a guy like this. Now, is this a product of Mike Munchak, or is this just another diamond in the rough thing? I don't know. I think a lot of people are looking ahead now at the Steelers' offensive line in 2019. I think they're really downplaying the fact of Matt Filer being the starter again. Everyone tends to think, with the draft picks and some of the other young men we're going to talk about may compete for that starting spot, and that may be true, but if they were already ready, he wouldn't have been the starter in 2018. So, this is another thing. If you have guys that are in reserve, this seems like a very deep offensive line group, regardless of their draft pedigree.
Yeah. I don't know how to say it effectively enough. This is a really good line. You talked about Matt Filer and the fact that, these guys have had some education under Munchak. It's going to continue under Surrett. But I honestly think that if the Steelers were able to be put under truth serum, they want Chukwuma Okafor to win that job in camp. But Matt Filer has played well enough that he's competing for that job. But you've got Gerald Hawkins in reserve. You've got Okorafor. You've got a good group of guys, and not to mention B.J. Finney as well. The offensive line is without a doubt, and we said this at the beginning of last season, both lines, and not that I want to jump over to the defensive line, but both lines, which is the core.
I know you do.
I know, but that's another show for another day. But I know, the strength that everybody talks about building up the middle, build from your core. Well, that's the core of this team, and that is solid. And as long as that core remains solid, this is going to be a team that competes. And I think this year, we've got a chance to see what they can continue to do, hopefully with a refocused and drama-free locker room. Hopefully, I'm looking for wood to knock on. I only have press board, but
good enough.
It's wood fiber, right? And it's an exciting time of the year. And I admit it. I could be on the offensive line's nuts, as they say. I love the offensive line. I think this is maybe the strongest positional group on the team.
Yeah, definitely. And I was starting to look up some of the contracts that are here and where everyone kind of stands. And I'm trying to – you jogged my memory here with Finney, because he was tendered just about starter money, $3 million to play in 2019 as a restricted free agent. I haven't seen an update on that just yet, but we'll see. And, B.J. Finney is somebody – we haven't gone through all the starters yet, but he is a young man who – Matt Filer jumped in there, but B.J. Finney, for all intents and purposes, looks like he's the next guy up, whether it be, as he's the backup center. Obviously, we've seen some success with that, and we've definitely seen him play in Ramon Foster's spot, too, and I think that surprised a lot of folks as to, we mentioned Ramon Foster's age, but, he just signed an extension. They brought him back. So he's got, you know, two more years under his belt. What was it? I'm trying to look at this. A little over $8 million, 2 years. So just to give that into some perspective, the yearly cash breakdown is about $4 million. And the backup in Finney, highly valued, is only making about $1 million less. And I kind of expect, I'm hoping, you know, that may be something where they rip it up and extend Finney a little longer. And then you see if Ramon plays in 2020 or beyond. But I mean, he's 33. He's going to be 34 by the time this contract expires, 35 as a unrestricted free agent. A lot of these offensive linemen are locked up. At least they were locked up through what was Ben's previous extension in 2020. They're going to be locked up maybe a little bit more here. I'm trying to look up Pouncey here as I try not to type too loudly on my machine. He's through 2022, and then he would be 33, so possibly extended, depends on Ben, who in his interview, that was the part I forgot. They were asking about whether he would play. He just got extended, and he's like, well, you know, I'll see when I go there. I'm not saying no, and I'm not saying yes. And surprisingly, that didn't bring out a whole bunch of retirement, oh my God, type things, you know, from him or from the media. Yeah. I'm looking at trying to look up Villanueva here, who is age 30. Remember, we were all, you know, surprised. Speaking of which, Mike Hilton is in OTAs without a contract. You want to talk about leaders? That's what Alejandro Villanueva just did a season or two removed, and everyone was looking to get him paid, and he was an exclusive rights free agent. I believe Hilton is at least a restricted free agent and tendered in much the same way as Finney. And, you know, Hilton has come out and said that he's not going to sign that tender. He's looking for, you know, he's looking to be not only be paid, but he's looking for some security, a several-year contract. I believe he will get it, just to kind of talk about the corners here. But here we go. Villanueva is at least through 2020 right now, so when they originally kicked that forward as a four-year deal. Let me see who else is on here. DeCastro, who we haven't talked about David DeCastro at all, but talk about, you know, an elite player. They didn't think so either. Pro Football Focus has him. I have it here. The number 11 guard, 71.7. I mean, he's just graded out just a little bit higher. 71.0 had Filer as number 32. And yep. You go from 32 to 11 over how many more points? 0.7 percentile points here on a chart. So it just goes to show you how competitive the NFL is, or how bad or crazy their grading is over a Pro Football Focus. So DeCastro is currently what, 29 years old, and he is here for 2021. Is there someone I missed? I think I have just about everyone kind of there. So you're looking at the same core group of players that are still going to be here for a few more seasons. That not only helps Sean Surrett, but they, you know, they have some young guys that are lying in wait. Now, I don't know how much more we need to talk about DeCastro, because we all know he's the stud, he's the man, he's the guy that you pretty much. You know, if there wasn't Pouncey, you would say he's the best offensive lineman of the group. I understand, yeah. Alejandro Villanueva is also a Pro Bowler. I think some of that's popularity contest with the fan vote, and, you know, being the former Army Ranger and everything like that. He's also a mountain of a man, and who doesn't love him? I mean, seriously, these guys are all guys you want to root for. But, you know, DeCastro, definitely, you got three Pro Bowlers with Pouncey, DeCastro, and Villanueva. It's very difficult for me to say if DeCastro is the best on the team. He probably is, and I know when we talked about this, we were revisiting some old drafts by class, and I really hated that. I hated most of the 2012 draft. You said the 2012 draft was great only for David DeCastro.
Right. There's no question at all that DeCastro is the best offensive lineman that they have. Was last year his best season? No, but that's okay. It still is. What did you have him ranked? 11th? They have him ranked. It's still one of the top seasons by a guard, in the league. DeCastro is, in my mind, a potential future Hall of Fame guy. He is, a key element of what they do and how they do it. And that is not to take anything away from Marquise Pouncey, who I think continues the legacy of awesome Steelers centers that they've continued to have throughout their history. Now, I think Villanueva is a testament to Mike Munchak's ability to coach and to his own perseverance and dedication to what he's doing. Because, you know, that's a guy who was raw can be, wasn't a tackle. He played other positions, and they molded him into what, you know, he has become. Yes, he probably gets into the Pro Bowl because of fan voting and because of his popularity, because of his service. But he's still not a bad guy. You know, he's not a bad tackle. Does he make some mistakes? Sure. Does he whiff a couple times? Sure. But he's still a good, solid tackle in a critical position guarding Ben's blindside. You know, when they had Marcus Gilbert, you were talking about a guy that should have been a Pro Bowl tackle. You know, and he had the injury bug over a couple years. So now you've got guys stepping in over there. And, you know, we talk about Ramon. And I will tell you, I don't know what PFF's grade on Ramon Foster is, but it's probably not good enough.
it's actually a 69.1. They have him at 16. So just to give you the grades for everybody here, let me go back to Pouncey. Pouncey, 69.0, number 14 graded center. DeCastro, 71.7, number 11 guard in the NFL. You go over to the other guard position, and Ramon is a 69.1 and 16th. And I know I said that as far as, you know, Filer, and I mixed up the tackle with the guard there, but I was just trying to show you, even with Ramon, you go, you know, the guards are a little more, you know, separate, not too much separation here, five spots, and you go almost, you know, a full 2 percentage points according to their grades. So you have guys that are definitely, the whole line is in the top, you know, 32, and they feel it's their best line, yet and all of them are just it ranked as like above average according to their color coding here. So yeah, Pouncey, number 14 overall. DeCastro is 11 with the guards. Foster is 16. Then Filer is 32 with the tackles, and Alejandro Villanueva is number 12 with the tackles at 78.1. Brian, he is actually rated higher than any of the other guys as far as the PFF grades. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of crazy because, you know, we're downplaying, you know, the guy's 6'9", 320. Okay, that's what they have him listed at here. I think he used to be a little bigger even, 330-ish maybe. And, you know, he played defensive end and tight end and all these different spots, you know, when he was with Army. And he actually came into the NFL with the Eagles as a defensive player. That's where, you know, Mike Tomlin, there's the infamous story of who's this guy. When you see him standing out there next to somebody else who's like a lot shorter, you know, he sticks out like a sore thumb, kind of like a Dan McCullers or somebody like that. And yeah. He's definitely grown into this spot because you always wondered, you know, does he deserve this contract? Should the Steelers have paid him this early? And everybody, you know, that likes, they love their players, they have their favorites, and he has performed up to the level, if not beyond. You know, it's tough to say because when he got his opportunity, you had Kelvin Beachum, who was in a contract year. And Kelvin Beachum's another guy who came out of nowhere, a seventh-round pick, to be a left tackle, which, you know, everybody knows. You know the story. You know the Blind Side movie and everything. The left tackle position, at least for right-handed quarterbacks, is protecting, you know, the blind side. So, you know, you don't get Ben Roethlisberger murdered out there. And not only did Beachum – not only was Beachum good at that, and Beachum was kind of undersized, now you have a guy who's raw and ginormous coming in, and you're thinking, well, is he going to be any good? And he was so good that, you know, they didn't have to make a decision on Beachum. And then they ended up making a decision on him and locking him in long term. You talk about BJ Finney, who's getting this kind of starter money. He turns 28 in October. It'll be interesting to see. You know, he should be, I would imagine he signs his tender, but I want to see if the Steelers do something maybe even more long term with him, because, you know, you have to be thinking about what's the worst case scenario here. David DeCastro has always been available. Knock on wood, you know, the offensive line has been healthy, but we've seen what it was like when they weren't healthy, or we see what it's like. I told you about the beginning of that 2010 season, and I was looking at that, and you had all of these guys are homegrown Steelers, right? But back then you had like Flozell Adams, for example, that they plucked, you know, at the end of his career after being, you know, a great player with the Dallas Cowboys, and they had him inserted into that starting lineup. And, you know, they used to do things like that maybe routinely, at least maybe one or two of the guys on the offensive line weren't necessarily homegrown players. all of these guys are homegrown players, even the backups for that matter. BJ Finney, and I want to get into, you know, some of the mid or late round draft picks here too, because we talk about that tackle position, whether it's, you know, up for grabs. The name you didn't mention was Gerald Hawkins, and Gerald Hawkins was taken, what, round three or round four not too long ago, and the guy's been sneak bitten with injuries. And I think his ship's sailing. He's got to show something. This is like Cinquez Golson. When you don't get on the field and you can't show anything, the best ability is availability. And, you know, the 2016 already, fourth round pick. So what's happening now is this is his contract year. This is his rookie contract. They may just move on entirely because they brought in Derwin Gray, who is a very large man, who's actually better at pass protection than run blocking, according to a lot of the scouting reports that are out there. I can't personally say. I'm just going by what others have said as I whack the microphone. And, you know, Derwin Gray, I think if he shows anything in camp, this may not even be a practice squad type of thing because Zach Banner was acquired last year. Zach Banner made the 53. They'll probably have nine offensive linemen total. So you're looking at Chukwuma Okorafor, a third-round pick from last year, who has actually gotten to play some because Hawkins' availability wasn't necessarily there. There's already an odd man out scenario. They obviously like Banner too. You have your five starters. You have Finney. You have he's number six. You have Okorafor, number seven. Then you almost have, you know, maybe out of two spots left, eight and nine, you have at least three men that are maybe fighting or battling for this spot between Zach Banner, between Derwin Gray, and between the guy who did have the previous draft pedigree, Gerald Hawkins. And I don't know. He may be the odd man out. I don't know that they could tuck Banner away on a practice squad still. I don't. The eligibility changed, and I haven't bothered to look up to see where he falls into that. They're definitely, you know, I don't think, unless Derwin Gray, you know, seventh-round picks, you don't always tend to think have a big shot. But with the Steelers, at least, and when you're talking offensive linemen, well, the offensive linemen do have a shot. Undrafted, we see, by virtue of who they have there, three guys that are undrafted that are starters or penciled in as starters for this upcoming season and were starters last year, they're there. So not being drafted doesn't mean a hill of beans in this whole kind of instance. And then they have some other you know, players that they brought in, such as Garrett Brumfield and Fred Johnson and Damian Prince. And, you know, RJ Prince was just recently released. I thought he may have even had a chance. And they have J.C. Hassenauer, who was with the Birmingham Iron as a starting center too, and if he could play multiple spots, you got a lot of young men fighting for some positions here, and they're going to be hungry and probably end up as, you know, one or two of those names are going to end up on the practice squad too. So it's going to be interesting to see not only the future at the right tackle spot, but the reserves behind whoever ends up being the starter there, thinking it's going to be Matt Filer. Then who, you know, who else is left and who makes the 53 at the end?
If Gerald Hawkins can stay essentially healthy, they'll give him a good, solid look. And I think unless Gray really impresses, he's probably destined for the practice squad. Unless, on the flip side of that, if he really unimpresses, he's destined for the street. But, you know, I think that they have to, they thought enough of Gerald Hawkins when they drafted him. He was very highly touted as a potential guy who just needed some work. That I think that they're willing to see if he can rebound from these injuries. But if he has another injury, I think that there'll be an IR settlement and that'll be the end of that. You know, you can only hold on to these guys for so long. And I agree, it's going to be an interesting battle at the back end. I think that there's as much as I like BJ Finney, as much as the Steelers may like BJ Finney, and as well as he's played, I think that they'd like to see somebody who is better at pass protection be in that position. And so, you know, that may be where, you know, Gray comes in. Or it could be one of the other guys. You know, it is possible that Banner could move inside. And you, if a core of four performs well enough, you know, then Banner could fill in as that secondary guard backup. and still find a spot. But I think it is going to be interesting to see how these guys pan out in the preseason and in camp. It's a battle. Not everybody likes watching offensive line battles, but it's actually a battle that's interesting and worth watching.
So Zach Banner, I believe, is on the roster the entire season last year. I'm just checking to see if there was any catch release type deal. I don't recall at all. They brought him in August, maybe from the Titans, I think. Here's another mountain of a man, Brian. 6'8", 360.
Yep.
You know, I can't even fathom that, to be completely honest. And you know, playing at an NFL level. So, yeah, it will be interesting. I remember I was kind of excited about Hawkins. A lot of people thought that if Hawkins would have stayed in college for an additional season, that he would have been a first-round draft pick. I remember there being a lot of draft value thought there. But unfortunately, you know, injuries have derailed his career. If they can't see what you're capable of doing, there's going to be a little bit of, you know, patience there. But I don't know how much longer there will be. So, anyways, Brian, you know, that pretty much puts a bow on the offensive line. We'll see some of the camp battles, but pretty much the starters and your primary backups are pretty much figured. You got Finney and Okorafor there. We'll see what the other spots are. So, as always, on this Memorial Day holiday weekend, thanks once again for joining me.
Always a pleasure. And, you know, it's I hope you enjoy your burgers or hot dog or whatever strange grilling type food you choose to partake in. And, you know, use your Steelers grill and all that good stuff.
Definitely. And you know what, Brian? Only ketchup on hot dogs for me. Sorry, no chili or mustard. I got the oddball one there. So
it's okay. I don't do hot dogs.
Oh, that's un-American, man.
No. Hot dogs are evil. They're bad. They have human parts in them. I'm out.
Human parts. I don't know where you're getting your hot dogs from, buddy. But anyways, until next time, folks, thanks once again for listening to the Steel City Underground Pittsburgh Steelers podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and don't forget to like, comment, subscribe. His name's Brian E. Roach. We always encourage our listeners to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.